This is Phil Ferrand. And I am driving home. It's Thursday today. It's been a good week at work. We got a bunch of good stuff done, and they turned down the air conditioning here a little bit. Everything seems to be puttering along. Last Friday was the final check-in registration thing for the new piece of software we'd been working on, and the report was that all went really well, and so we're good. We're through what we need to get through, and we've checked data and balanced data, and all the MFA transactions seem to have gotten corrected. We have a few little anomalies, but that's to be expected because data that we needed was missing. And that type of thing happens because we have a home missions department, a U.S. missions department, and then we have a world missions department. And the particular ones we were missing are coming over from the U.S. missions department, and they had not officially joined the world missions department yet. And so there are certain key financial pieces that were missing. But we made divisional accounting aware of those, and so they'll take care of that. And they're actually going to hold doing some of their transfers until next month to where we can get these last few things taken care of. We did have one missionary couple that were supposed to be coming in for missionary training. They did not come in for missionary training. They only came in for missionary renewal. So I'm not sure what was going on there, but they had a bunch of kids, and they may have talked to their region, and their region said, look, just come in for renewal, because they do enough activities with the kids that they have to charge a fairly substantial price for that week. And so, you know, with five kids, you know, they might have gotten a special dispensation. But aside from those little literally problems we can count on one hand, you know, everything seemed to go fine. So, yay. So that's all fine and well. I did put myself on a hiatus this week from writing because I've been working on costumes, but I am expecting to kick back in on Sunday and start the next writing sprint. I will have some reading to do, and I'm trying to decide now, based on how much work I have left on costumes and that sort of thing, as to whether or not I'm going to get in a couple of hours on Friday and Saturdays in order to kind of jumpstart that process, or whether I'm just going to dive in on Sunday. I am ahead, and so I'm in fact like 2 weeks ahead of where I would normally be. So, you know, who knows? I'll figure it out. I will figure it out. So that's all well and good, and that will be book 21, which is after book 21. There's only three left, so there you go. With costumes, I have been focusing on Marvin the Martian this week, and it's really, the whole thing is such an interesting process because I get these design constraints. I've mentioned this in the past, that the Marvin the Martian costume, the eyes, I wanted the eyes to move. And I kind of had an idea how we would do that, but when you're dealing with the physical world, you know, maybe you can simulate everything in the computer, and maybe you can run all the formulas, and maybe that's fine. But when I build things out in the physical world, I always end up where I'm thinking, oh, that's not quite right. Because I'm not taking a ton of time thinking every piece through. I just get started. Figuring that Jesus is going to guide me. He's going to help me. Maybe I'll have to take a step back here and there, but it'll be fine. It'll work out. And I leave the timing in his hand as well. You know, I just try to be diligent, diligent about working as much as I can on it when I have the time, doing whatever is the next step, and just whatever happens, happens. And I didn't get as quite as much done this week as I had hoped. But in the process of doing this, God was faithful and he was kind, and I kept putting together the pieces of information I needed. And in fact, you know, we're at a situation now where just today, I think I got the final piece for the movement of the head and for how I will trigger those movements, I think. So that piece is in place, and we'll see how far I can get this weekend on that, because it would be really, really good to have at least the movement and the basic head in place by this weekend. I am down to 3 weeks, so that would be great if I could kind of get that put together. And then I have to build out the helmet and anchor it to the shoulder braces, and I have to build the shoes, and I have to build the gun, and I have to get myself some oversized cartoon hands. Those I can buy, though. So I was going to build some cartoon hands that would be the right size, but I'm not sure. I'm just not sure if I'm going to have the time to get that done. So we'll see. If I don't, I don't. It's okay. Anyway, so, you know, that's all puttering along, and it's good. I came across, this week, this actually last week, I came across a discussion between Jordan Peterson and sadness. That usually doesn't do that. Sorry. That just slid off. Sorry. So I came across this week that I slowed down to go around the corner, and for some reason the recorder slipped off my little foam pad there. Sorry. I came across an interview that Jordan Peterson did with an author. I think he was also a psychologist, sociologist, something. And he had written a book about Marx, Karl Marx. He has done historical biography stuff before. I think he wrote 8 books on Winston Churchill, something like that. And he decided to write this book on Karl Marx from a very specific perspective, because he said it hadn't really been explored in the media. And I was honestly quite surprised when I heard what he had written the book on. But as he was talking, the more he talked, the more I thought, well, of course it would be this way. Because all you have to do is look at what the teachings of Karl Marx have caused in the world, and it's quite obvious who inspired Karl Marx to write his treatise. Of the things that I didn't know about Karl Marx that were brought out by this researcher, his life was in constant disarray. Fully disorganized, unresponsible for his wife and children, to the point that, according to this researcher, Karl Marx did not bathe. He did not bathe, period. He didn't see the point. And he was so unkempt and unclean that he would periodically break out in boils. He never really earned very much money, and he was constantly begging money from the relatives. He was always certain that he was very downcast and oppressed, and he was being opposed by everyone. He apparently managed to convince his wife of this as well. And so the two of them were constantly shaking their fists at those around them and telling them what bad people they were for not taking care of them, which sounds very, very familiar. Of interest was the fact that Karl Marx also, in his earlier days, and perhaps even continued on, penned poems and short stories and plays, and he consistently, in his short stories and plays, we got gravel on our driveway on Wednesday. The kiddos were very kind to come down and help spread things around on Wednesday while I was working, but we're still in the process of kind of tamping it down. So there are spots when it has a few waves in it, so if you hear my voice going blah, 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 that's because I'm driving over some stuff. I'm gonna stop here and get my mail. A constant theme in his plays and in his poems was Satan, fallen angels, and Mephistopheles, which there's a play, I can't remember, where Mephistopheles is a character in this play, and the philosophy of Mephistopheles, which is a Mephistelian philosophy, is destroy everything. Tear everything down. Just tear it all down. No real solution for how to build it better, which of course communism never builds anything better. And as I heard someone say recently, the only equality that you will achieve in Marxism and communism is equality of poverty. Everyone is guaranteed to become poor except those at the very, very top. So, this was the philosophy that undergirded Marx's life, and when he went to write his treatise about how the world could be improved, he did it very much from the philosophy that everything should be torn down. Everything should be destroyed, which, in case you haven't made the connections, is pretty much what the critical theory people say. We just have to tear everything down. We have to be highly critical of everything. That was my great disappointment in hearing what the critical of critical theory meant. Because you hear about critical analysis and those kind of things, and it's a very high-level, heady, thinking persons, you know, et cetera, et cetera. In the case of critical theory, it's none of that. Basically, it comes down to just criticize everything. That's why it's called critical theory. Okay, well, great. You know, you get to criticize everything. So then what? What's your solution? Well, they don't know what their solution is. Just tear everything down, and then we'll figure out how to build something after that, which, of course, has never worked out. So that really was Karl Marx's viewpoint, that it was very much influenced by the same type of destructive, demonic influences that are manifested with people who are engaging with Satan, with fallen angels, with those who would seek to destroy. And it's very much in line with the philosophies that you find from those who are involved in school shootings. That when they write, they talk about just destroying all life, that they just want everything to be destroyed and torn down. And it's very Mephistelian. It's very much an embrace of Mephistopheles. I have to pause and think how to say that. So that was interesting in itself, that really Marx didn't care about the proletariat. He really didn't care about the common man. He was just angry and upset with everyone that people weren't recognizing what a great person he was, and he just wanted everything torn down. And so his definition of moving forward was, well, we have the oppressed and the oppressor, and we have to fight the oppressor. And how we know they're an oppressor is they're successful. So anybody who has something a little bit better than what I have, that's an oppressor. Don't care how he got it. Don't care if they worked hard to get it. Don't care anything. The fact that they've been able to achieve something makes them an oppressor, which, of course, constantly paints the nation of Israel and those who are Jewish as oppressors because they are the most successful minority in the world. So all of that's very interesting, and it's all based on envy. I don't like the fact you have something I don't have. Instead of acknowledging that you may have done something to gain you those things, I'm simply going to take all that away by saying you're an oppressor. The only reason you have those things is because you've gamed the system to have those things. And that's evil to do that, and you're evil, and that's why you have those things. Because I'm deeply envious of you. The other thing that was really interesting, and I think Jordan Peterson is absolutely correct in this, is that Jordan Peterson started talking about the fact that this was not a new philosophy. This underlying theme of oppressor and oppress, and there's nothing any more than just power dynamics. That's not new. In fact, that quote-unquote power dynamic and that approach to life, Jordan Peterson quite rightly, I think, pointed out that you can trace that all the way back to the first human story, the first stories of humans who were born and raised on earth, i.e. Cain and Abel. Because what you have in Cain and Abel is you have Abel, who listens to what God says and produces a sacrifice for God that is acceptable. And you have Abel, or you have Cain, who decides he's not going to listen to what God tells him is an acceptable sacrifice, and he's just going to go and do what he wants and present to God whatever he wants, and God is just supposed to accept it. And the fulfillment and the outgrowth of Cain's envy of his brother is that Cain becomes the first murderer. Because out of that envy, out of that us versus them, out of that I am being oppressed and that's the oppressor over there, out of the haves and have-nots comes what always comes, and that's destruction. So that was a really interesting tie-in to see, okay, so this philosophy of us versus them, of power dynamics, of oppressor and oppressed, of envy, this philosophy existed right at the beginning, and it is carried through the ages, and it was finally made popular in a different form by Karl Marx, who was fascinated with fallen angels, who was fascinated with Satan, who wrote plays about the fallen angels and Satan, who wrote poems about it, who wrote short stories about it. It's the same lie over and over and over and over again. It's us versus them. And then, of course, once Karl Marx embraced economic inequities, and once that was shown to be profoundly untrue, you can't get to equality in economics in a communist system, which it was demonstrated to be profoundly untrue in 1880 in the 1989-ish area when the Soviet Union collapses, all those people who resonated with the us versus them were envious of those, there's oppressors and oppressed. All of those people had to find something else to get behind. And what they found to get behind is critical race theory. Then that was applied to race and to gender and to sexual preference and to all of these things. And this oppressor-oppressed narrative has just been fed and fed and fed. And you will find at the base of it that all of those who embrace that philosophy are really looking to just tear everything down. And you will find that, in fact, their motivation at the bottom of it is that they are envious and that they believe they're oppressed and that there is an oppressor class that they believe needs to be destroyed. So it's really interesting to see the length of time that these lies have been in existence. And it is just as impressive to take a step back now that we are ramping into Independence Day. It is just as impressive to realize that we live in a country that was founded on beliefs and principles that are diametrically opposed to that. And frankly, we've had a pretty good run at it. We hold these truths to be self-evident that all men are created equal. We all. That's the principle of human interaction that the United States was founded on. Have we always succeeded at that? No. Have we always been the good, best stewards of that idea? No. But we have at least striven towards that in some admittedly accident-prone, unskilled way. But we have nonetheless held that as a standard that we should live up to. As opposed to the other way to do it, us versus them, envy, oppressor, oppressed. And so, you know, as we ramp into Independence Day, let us remember that, in fact, yes, the principles that the United States were founded on are the only principles which you can actually build a society on. It has to be we all. Us versus them cannot last because it's so destructive. And let us pray for our country and do our part to be examples of those who believe that the way forward is we all. This is Phil Ferrand, and I have made it home.